Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
Thank you, Alec Webb. Alec Webb, our announcer, not only on our podcast, but all of our MotorWeek episodes. And welcome to MotorWeek podcast number 55. Joining me in Studio C today are our Over the Edge reporter, Stephen Chupnik.
Hey, hey.
And our associate producer and the guy who's in charge of all of our road tests on MotorWeek, Ben Davis.
Pleasure as always.
Okay, our topics, we're going to start with two new cars, Volkswagen's bigger and cheaper Passat sedan and Chrysler's newest convertible. Let's head for the Passat first. Let me set the stage. This is an all-new 2012 Volkswagen Passat. This is a larger car, substantially like $7,000 cheaper than before. Very much aimed at American taste, so much so that it's actually being built in a new plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And it is going after the Camry and Accord for the midsize buyer. The aim here is to have a car that will be a mainstream car, unlike the previous Passat, and still maintain some of that German Volkswagen sports sedan-ness that has made their four-doors so popular. So with that setup, were they successful? Who wants to start?
I have to agree. And, you know, I mean, I thought it was a nice car, you know, just even just from the looks of it, it looks like a nice car. The ride seems
It's certainly conservative.
It's conservative, but the look is, you can tell it's a bigger car. It's a nicer.
And it would appeal to the kind of buyer who's looking for a family car that they know, they take one look at it and they think, oh, it's going to be roomy, which it is, of course.
Well, I think you take a look at it, you see it's bigger, but also the price tag, or at the same time, the price tag is smaller. So, and it does, I think, beat the Toyota and the Honda.
But what about some of the Facebook comments that you've seen? A lot of our viewers, they're not very happy with it.
Well, I think only because, and we did, we put this out to our social media outlets, and people responded just hearing the fact that it's $7,000 cheaper initially. I don't think they're happy. And I think
because they think that something's been given up.
Well, of course. And I think that's what we were talking about is the purists of Volkswagen fans or any really car fans. Right. They hear, you know, a significant price decrease and they think that something's been taken away. And
yeah, I'm not so sure that's totally correct. But Ben, what are your impressions?
I mean, still, it still carries over a lot of quirky things. The coolest thing that I think is that it still comes with you can get it with a 2-liter turbo diesel.
And that's going to be a sweet motor.
And that makes it the only car in that class that you can get a diesel in.
And that you will have to use urea in it, which in the smaller Jetta you don't. But, you know, every 10,000 miles you have to put a little fluid in it, which you can do yourself. So I don't think that's a big deal.
And you can choose either DSG or 6-speed manual with that diesel,
which
too.
Which is pretty impressive. My impression of the car, conservative outside, we knew that was going to come because we'd all seen the new Jetta. Huge back seat, biggest in its class, bigger than Camry or Accord. A larger trunk than Accord.
Big audio, too, with the collaboration with Fender.
Talk about that.
400 watts, 9-speaker stereo. I mean, they got it right. Americans want a bigger car. They don't care so much about interior. I mean, the parts that they can touch, they want to be soft. Hard parts of plastic are fine if they're not in your everyday reach, if you don't touch them every day. Yeah, and big audio. We love big audio.
Yeah, I thought the seats were very comfortable. I think it is a softer car than before, which you would expect. However, on this issue of German sports sedan handling, it wasn't too many years ago that every BMW and Mercedes we got in, we talked about how much body roll there was, even though the cars basically, as the old saying goes, handled like they were on rails. This seems to be a return to that. The Passat is definitely softer than the previous Passat, and it probably doesn't handle quite as crisply, but it handles a lot better than anything else I can think of in its class.
It's going to be, in my eyes, it's going to be a cool test between that and Kia Optima Sonata,
which is a very impressive car too.
Yeah, yeah. But I think mainly we're seeing a trend of people trying to stray away from Honda, Toyota here into other outlets, and maybe those that don't choose Kia or Hyundai, you know, or will go VW. just to try to get a little breath of fresh air.
It's, I don't think the new Passat is an appliance, a term that's often given to the Camry and Accord. It's more car than that.
And
of course,
like,
and a prettier car than that. And like all the new midsize cars, that, you know, the four cylinder engine is going to be the volume engine, would be either gas or diesel. Well, I guess the base engine is a five cylinder, but less than six. The six cylinder, you can get a VR6 with it, but I don't think the take on that's going to be very high.
Ben, you mentioned the plastic, and we always get cars in that we always say, "Oh, it's plastic, look at this plastic." This one, it like you said, it didn't. I mean, just from the interior shot, you look at it, it doesn't look that way.
Yeah, the whole top of the dash from the wood line up is all soft touch, and you know, from the wood line down is hard touch. But how many times do you touch that?
And that soft touch, which actually goes over to some of the door handles and so forth, that they use a special paint and all these days that gives you that touch, that feel that it's not just plastic. I think it's very nicely done. Yeah. It isn't the most exciting car in the world to look at, but very, very pleasurable car to drive and very efficient.
It's aggressive in
a conservative
non-boisterous
sort of
way.
In a non-boisterous way. Well put. Let's now look over at the convertible version of the Chrysler 200. The Chrysler 200 sedan is selling very well for Chrysler. It's being heralded as one of their comeback vehicles. This is, of course, the 200 is a thorough redone, or I shall say an aggressive remake of the Sebring. And now that's followed over to the convertible. The Chrysler 200 convertible still shares the disappearing hard or soft top with the old Sebring, and it has basically the same size. I think from judging our staff comments, there was a big, big split on this car. How did you feel about it?
I like the sedan. I just wasn't a fan of the convertible.
The Sebring convertible or the 200?
No, the 200.
All right. Why? Why didn't you like the convertible?
To me, it felt completely cheaped out. It didn't feel like you were really driving a quote, not luxury, but a premium car.
Like their ads are trying
to
push.
I think the sedan you get in, you know, it's a little higher quality.
I want to get to the bottom of this, though. I've heard this comment from other people on the staff, and I don't understand what are you exactly saying? And I'll ask Ben the same question. What is it about it? Was it just the overall feel of it? Give me an idea of why you came away with that impression.
I sat in it, and we test for all the seat movements and everything, and you moved up and back.
Right.
That was one. And for something that's supposed to be luxury.
So it didn't have enough seat adjustment forward, its price.
Yeah, forward, backward, and it was like, okay, that's one thing. The stereo was cheap. It was just a plain, you know, simple stereo thing.
Now, okay, I want to stop you for a second. I'm not defending the car, but remember, this is a reasonably priced real four-seat convertible, and you can't really call the Camaro or a Mustang a four-seat convertible. Is there anything else on the market in this price class that can carry four adults comfortably? I don't think there is. So aren't we in danger of comparing this to a $50,000 BMW or Mercedes?
Well, we sort of are, because Chrysler has made it out to seem like they want to compete with that. So to me, that's what I was looking at it as.
They're promising more than the actual car delivers, because the actual car is based on a car that was not a particularly well done convertible.
And the iPod, not to go, but the iPod, there was a iPod or a USB insert.
Right.
And all it did was charge. It never played. It would never, it didn't connect. And then when you put the top down, it was the cloth, which is fine.
That's kind of the rental car top, I think.
Right. But what we noticed is we had a cover for a windscreen.
Oh, there was a wind blocker.
A wind blocker that you would break your car, and
you didn't think it was well made.
Not only was it not well made, it did not stay in its position at all, and I would feel very uncomfortable driving even 20 miles an hour with it.
Ben,
Well, the first things I noticed that turned me off, and I wasn't turned off completely by the 200, but the dash design looked a little flat to me, a little unimpressive.
Even though it's basically the same as the sedan.
Right, right.
Now, did you not like it in the sedan?
I guess I didn't like it in the sedan. I paid a lot more attention to it in the 200.
For some reason,
something about the sun setting on it.
Well, that's well, you have more light, so maybe you saw it. You could see more details. That's an interesting observation.
The seat support seemed a little down for me. It seemed a little flat and hard. And there was more cowl shake than I would like to have in a convertible. And the rear seat room, it didn't seem that abundant to me, more so than, I mean, maybe it had been too long since I've been in a Camaro convertible or a Mustang convertible, but it didn't seem like a whole lot extra than that. And I believe the one we tested was 34 grand or close to it.
Yeah, it was about 34 grand.
I'm just saying, in my opinion, I would flock more towards a Mustang or Camaro convertible and give up that little bit extra room in the back just to have the stiffness and handling the car.
I think that's true. I mean, in our road test, we actually made that point that if you are looking for a car that is a handler, the Mustang or Camaro convertibles are the route you ought to go.
And there's got to be a little bit of resale value. There's always resale value ticking through my mind as far as that goes, too. I could probably do a little better in the Camaro or Mustang convertible.
Okay. Well, I think my age makes me take a little different viewpoint on it.
I didn't want to say anything age-related, but
I think it is an older – I think it feels like a convertible that will appeal to an older clientele. I liked the ride. It didn't bother me, the little bit of cowl shake, because compared to what we used to see – first of all, doesn't seem to be any worse than the Mustang. It is worse than the Camaro. Compared to cars that do better, cost substantially more money. Seats I thought were adequate. I like the dash design. I did think the covering on the seats was a little industrial looking. All in all, I thought for the price versus its competition, it was quite okay. I wouldn't say it was great, but it was okay. Love the new Chrysler Pentastar 6 in it. I thought
yeah,
that was
absolutely
huge improvement. Huge improvement. Windows down, I could carry on a conversation with the top down. So it's very funny. It does seem to be a car that almost no one on the staff under 40 years old liked it. And, you know, the few of us that did like it, I think were older. So I think that says a lot about what the car is, that it's a placeholder for something better that would be more fitting to the Chrysler image. I think your points are well taken. Anything you want to add? Anything?
No, I'm good.
Silence is deafening. Okay, before we move on to our lightning round and take a look at our mailbag, Stephen, I want to come back to you. Coming up on gear segments on the show, some new technology, or I should say some existing technology done better. What have you got for us today?
Yeah, Bluetooths and portable Bluetooths are becoming the norm. A lot of governments, state governments, are making them mandatory.
Can't talk in the car without them.
Hands-free,
right.
And I think this day and age, you need a cell phone, and you don't need a cell phone, but it's very, very important. And I think everybody is pretty much using a cell phone. The Supertooth Buddy, which is what I have in my car, it's an older model, portable Bluetooth. It's basically one of the clearest I've ever.
Is that the name of the company?
Used. Supertooth.
Supertooth.
Is, yes.
Uh-huh.
And they've just come out with a new model called the HD, which. To me, I've never seen anything more advanced, and I'm not trying to go too far, but there's three buttons on it, and there's more things that you can do on these three
For
buttons.
Instance.
There's a volume control scroll.
And it's a real. It looks like a knob.
It's a knob, but when you push the knob, you talk into it. It syncs up to your phone book, and it's made for this, more smartphones than anything else.
Why do you think it's superior, though, than there's so many Bluetooth devices out there?
It's voice control. Through you can say You can say any of your
you can talk text messages.
You can
with
you can talk text messages.
You said something about being able to go onto Facebook with it.
Yeah, Facebook and Twitter. Obviously, the social media is those are the two big ones, and they have status updates that you can literally talk and use your voice to update your status.
More to distract.
Will that read out incoming text messages?
There's a certain system and technology with Dial to Go.
And how much is that one?
It's not out yet, so they haven't put a full price on it. It's probably going to be about $100-$150.
It's pretty big. It's taller than say an iPhone 4. It's not as wide, but it's fairly tall.
It's thick. It looks like
half the size of a cable remote.
Or a cable remote, right. Or a half speaker. The cool thing about these SuperTooth Bluetooth are it's a visor mount. But let's say, you know, the sun's going, you flip it over, it's a magnet.
The actual clip, you
take it off and you flip it onto the other side. That's kind of the neat.
What else you got?
And then for our environmentally friendly Bluetooth people.
Aren't we all? My goodness.
I think this is actually kind of neat. Skosh, which is a really neat company that has a lot of neat gadgets, came out with a solar panel Bluetooth.
Sweet.
That mounts to your window. It's a regular Bluetooth. There's nothing out of the ordinary.
But you don't have to worry about plugging it in to recharge it.
Well, actually, you don't. But in case that you're out of light or you're out of range or something.
Or you're in Alaska with
the land of the mitten during the winter.
There's a power adapter that does that. And this also connects, goes through your address book, updates it. It'll read out who's calling you. You can voice.
Can you charge anything off of that?
You can charge with the screen. They're working on. There's a new model that you actually can.
Oh, so now it can be charge your cell phone off of.
Correct.
That's pretty cool. How much do you think that's going to be?
This is actually only about $50, which is really neat.
Bargain. I paid more than that for my.
I paid
Bluetooth.
$50 for lunch.
Yeah.
So you did. So that, you didn't take me.
But that's these are the two newest ones that I have. And the SuperTooth HD and Buddy, I'll be talking about in an upcoming year.
Okay, good deal. We're now going to move on to our lightning round, where our Motor Week panelists have the opportunity to share their opinions on topics making headlines. Okay, here is the issue for today. Now that Fiat is buying out the U.S. stake in Chrysler Group, giving it the majority, the companies will be merged. And there's talk about Chrysler moving its headquarters to Italy. Would that be a smart move? And the clock has started.
That's big business.
Oh, come on. They're not going to move their headquarters.
I don't think they would ever do it. But you know what? If they did, they do. To me, it's not. I'm not a Chrysler employee. I've never. I mean, I own a Dodge.
Let's face it. The control of the company is by Fiat.
Right.
But just like Toyota. Toyota has an incredibly huge headquarters, as does Honda in the U.S.
Right.
And they do almost everything for the U.S. in as far as designing and planning there. So it's going to be the same.
It would never happen.
Deal.
Unless Fiat wants to come over and put up a big headquarters in the U.S.
Now, that's quite possible.
Yeah.
Because, after all, they're bringing back both Fiat and Alfa Romeo vehicles. So they could come in and take the building and put the Fiat logo on the front of it, and Chrysler just be a part of it.
They control some pretty heavy truck lines, too.
Absolutely.
You could see start filtering over. Who knows?
What do you think about the whole idea, though, of Fiat now controlling Chrysler? Do you think this is going to be good for the long term for the brands?
I think for the big three in general, I think it's good because they're still the big three.
Although now one speaks a little bit with an Italian accent.
Right.
It sounds good to me.
First reaction from what we've seen them do a lot with a little money. And, of course, it looks like the Fiat 500 is off to a very good start.
Fiat, they know what they're doing.
Yeah,
history tells you that.
Yeah, again, people my age remember the old Fiat. Well, I can guarantee you the new Fiat is not the old Fiat. It's not the Fiat of the 60s. And I agree with both of you. I don't think they're going to be moving their headquarters. But definitely, we're going to be seeing decisions made that fit Fiat globally. So in other words, we already know that most of the platforms for new Chrysler products are going to be based on platforms that Fiat is building for themselves and worldwide.
Viper-powered 500.
And a Viper-powered, you know, who knows? They're talking about the next Viper being based on one of the Alfa Romeos.
Yeah, that would be pretty
nice. That's pretty cool. Okay, let's move on now to our Motor Week mailbag. And if we pick your letter to be read on one of our podcasts, you'll get a Motor Week t-shirt. Is that correct, producer? One bump of the bell means yes, two means no. There you go. Thank you. That's Michelle over there on the bell. All right. How do you determine the proper tires for your vehicle? And this, by the way, comes from Trevor. How do you determine the proper tires for your vehicle?
I buy tons of tires for my vehicles. First thing I do is I try to get as much online research as possible. I know our old buddy's Tire Rack. It's a great way. If you look up tires at your, you can punch up your vehicle and read a lot of different reviews about people that have bought tires for them, what kind of tires they bought, what kind of performance they've gotten out of them, longevity, things like that. It all depends on what you do on a daily basis. If you need an all-season tire, if you're more performance-minded, you need a summer-season tire, you just want to tear up the canyons. There's so many choices. There's so many tires out there to choose from.
If you're just looking to replace the OEM tires, the first and the route that Pat Goss is always talking about, and I agree with it, is you look at what's on the car and you try and replace it with that same tire, or at least with a successor to that tire, because often the tire you've got, they may have changed the model at that point. And I agree with you that someone like Tire Rack, and there are other sources, but Tire Rack's excellent for looking and seeing what they have to offer, and I've used them a lot of times. Stephen, why don't you give us your insight in it? Because I mean, a lot of you are relatively new to the show. Before you came to Motor Week, if you had to replace tires, what did you do?
You know, funny enough, I would go to one of my dad's friends who had a store,
a tire store.
And he would basically put the tires on, and I'm a novice at looking for tires because he
but
was
you
always,
trusted someone.
I trusted someone, right. and I think like Ben said, go on the internet, read your sources. But I think that your best thing is talk to your buddies, talk to family, somebody who either one has a similar car to you or the same car, or somebody who knows.
Yeah. Here's the big thing though: no matter what you do, never put a tire on your car that has a lower speed rating than the tire that came on it. No reputable dealer should ever do that. And you should ask, you should get familiar with what the speed ratings are. Look at the tire information on your tire. You can tell what speed rating is. It's a letter. It's usually an H, or it could be a U. It could be a Z. It could be lots of things. And you never want to have a tire on there that has a lower speed rating than what the car came with. And no reputable tire dealer will do that. Okay, that brings to a close our podcast number 55 for Motor Week. That was a very lively one. Thanks very much to our over-the-edge reporter, Stephen Chupnik, and our associate producer and road test guru, Ben Davis. I'd also like to thank our audio engineer for the day, which is Jim Bigwood, our podcast creator, Bob Mixter, and our producer, Michelle Parker, the lady with the bell. And thanks for joining us very much. Be sure to watch Motor Week on your local public television station and also every week on Discovery's HD Theater. I'm John Davis. Join us again for more Motor Week.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by RockAuto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at motorweek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.